This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. Today, it's our Alumni Musical Maverick show featuring performers who have appeared in our program and who have now gone on to do some really adventuresome things in music. A violist who hosts her own exciting radio show in New York, a concertizing pianist, an award-winning composer, and more. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. And here, sitting beside me in our studios, is our musically adventuresome host, Mr. Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson. So yeah, hard to believe, but a lot of the kids on our show are now in their late 20s, and already they're changing the music world. Some of them are doing cool stuff under the radar. Others have gotten quite a bit of recognition. Like my first guest, cellist David Ricciero. David recently won what is perhaps the most prestigious cello competition in the world. He and I began our talk with a little reminiscing. David Ricciero, great to have you back on the show. Do you remember what you played?
Sure. We played Requiebros by Casado together, and that was a long time ago, but it was a lot of fun.
Do you remember anything from that particular performance? Any firsts for you?
Actually, you know, that was the very first performance of my life that I ever drank coffee right before. And, I certainly felt the effects and I don't know if I've done that ever since, but either I remember that as well.
Something you wouldn't repeat. I remember doing a concert after a Big Mac. I think that was a very bad idea. I quit that very soon. Well, David, caffeine and all, it was a totally memorable performance for me and for all of us who were there that day. I know from hearing your recent stuff, your music making has only gotten deeper and become more broad and generous over the past 7 years, as our audience will hear. In fact, of all of the cuts on your now debut CD, you chose the one we're about to hear as representative of where you are right now in your playing. So tell us what we're going to hear and why you chose it and how it reflects that.
We will hear the first movement of the Debussy Sonata for Cello and Piano. It's a really wide palette of colors, and it's just a little gem.
Excellent. Let's hear it then.
Thank you.
We heard movement one from Debussy's Sonata in D Minor for cello and piano, featuring our guest, David Ricciero, and his collaborating pianist, Liz DiMio. That cut is from David's CD titled David Ricciero Debut. Since being on our show in high school, you've earned your bachelor's, your master's degrees, and you've done quite a few prestigious performances and won several competitions, but winning the most recent round of the Naumburg International Competition, this was very big news. It doesn't come around that often for cello, does it?
No, it's nothing preset, really. So I guess it's happened approximately every 7 or 8 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. So in 2008, when it rolled around, it seemed like cellos came out of all the corners of this country and of Europe and other countries, and mm-hmm. there was I think almost 90 first round cellists. So.
Well, I would imagine, you know, the jury would have been, you know, stellar in terms of world class cellists. Do you pay attention to that, or do you throw it all away and pretend that you're playing for friends?
No, I think I always hold on to the fact that I'm playing for very distinguished musicians and artists, and I try to maybe take the approach, you know, I know you've heard this 500 times, but I really feel I can show you a slightly new version right now, mm-hmm. and maybe that would be my approach. And then also I think it's important to really be programming a lot of new works, or at least a lot of unfamiliar works.
How about, I know you were in Michigan studying, that must have been alleviating of any distractions while you're working. I mean, is it a nice environment in which to work, would you say?
Yeah, I've been a big fan of all the schools I've been studying at or teaching at.
You've been following your teacher Richard Aaron around quite a lot. He's somebody who's done great things for your playing, and obviously somebody that you've really connected with. What was your first meeting with him like, and how long did it take for you to figure out that this was the guy you wanted to work with?
Well, it was very quick. I took a college trip out to Cleveland, not knowing very much, and just over the course of a weekend, he generously spent a lot of time with me. I was sold after one weekend, and I followed him to University of Michigan for my master's, and it's just been an amazing experience to be able to have him as a teacher and a mentor, and luckily we're still very close in touch.
So I guess it's really no surprise with this wonderful relationship you have with your teacher Richard Aaron that teaching now has developed into a serious love of yours. How did that come about?
The way it came about is really, I think, as I was traveling for concerts, you know, I would give master classes as often as I could, whether it was for a very small batch of cellists in a small town or at major schools like in Cleveland or San Francisco Conservatory. It's like I caught a bug or something, but I've always been interested in teaching, but at this age, I haven't had that many opportunities. But it keeps on growing, and so now it's a privilege to be on faculty at the University of Puget Sound.
Well, you're certainly making a splash. You're a Seattle-Tacoma residency with a little splash performance-wise. Tell everybody where you're playing this fall gig.
Yeah, I'll be playing a very recent work by Goliov called Marielle, and that's with the Seattle Symphony in Ben Arroyo Hall in October. So. Oh. Yeah, I have my hands full for the near future.
That's quite a celebration for David Ricciero. David Ricciero, our 25-year-old cellist.
From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org.
My next guest, violist 27-year-old Nadia Sirota, is already outclassing me in the radio world. She hosts a wonderfully imaginative radio program in New York City. She does that along with performing as a violist in a huge variety of genres and in all sorts of venues. I caught up with her a couple of weeks ago at the radio station from which she broadcasts, WNYC.
Nadia Sirota, 10 years, and here you are, radio star and violist extraordinaire and great personality. And we knew you 10 years ago Has it been that long?
It's amazing to me that it's been a decade, actually.
It's great to have you back on the show. I mean, you played a very mature piece, this gorgeous Clark Sonata, Rebecca Clark Sonata, which was
right.
really deep. And we were at Symphony Hall, and you were completely unfazed.
You know, it's really interesting to listen to old recordings because on the one hand, stuff tends to sound a little bit better than you remember it sounding. But when you're in high school, you spend something like a semester or an entire year on something as short as a movement of a piece. I actually viscerally remember like all the little rubatos we took and all, you know, all of these decisions we sweated over like crazy. I have the ability to kind of listen and put myself in that headspace, and that's kind of freaky too.
Not only was there a terribly assured and beautifully warm-toned performance of the Rebecca Clark Sonata, but also it was your vocal performance on that first appearance that was memorable. Do you remember that one?
Oh, I sure do. For some reason, in the pre-interview when I went on that show when I was 17, I spent about 20 minutes talking about Krispy Kreme donuts. I think as a result, I inspired something in the From the Top family and ended up singing this Krispy Kreme donut jingle, which was ridiculous, honestly, but really fun.
Krispy Kreme donuts, the musician's inspiration. Krispy Kreme donuts, they'll improve your intonation. Too many notes to learn, too little time to spend. Try a dozen Krispy Kremes, the musician's greatest friend.
You really were right in there. You pitched in, and that, you know, your voice sounded great.
Well, thank you.
You made the bit. You made the bit.
Good, good, good.
And now, flash forward 10 years, and what do we find? Nadia Sirota is on the air. You're hosting your own radio show.
I'm Nadia Sirota, and you're listening to New York's new home for new music, Q2. We're going to continue with a composer who has really taken the string quartet in a very, very 21st century direction. The New York-based composer Tristan Perich is obsessed with one-bit electronics, that being the smallest amount of information you can have to create digital audio.
So talk about what you're actually playing on your show.
It's almost all 20th and 21st century sort of contemporary classical music. But this radio show, and in fact not just the show, the entire station, I think is geared at a slightly different group of people than maybe your typical classical music station. Mm-hmm. I think we're really interested in getting an audience of really interested people that are sort of arts forward, but that might not know that much about classical music to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you think about your 20-somethings, 30-somethings that are into contemporary literature, they're into contemporary art, they go to right. museums, they're consuming all of this wonderful culture all the time, but they maybe have not been that exposed to classical music. And the cool thing about music that's been written by essentially their peers is that there is going to be some kind of vernacular similarity, some entry point that makes sense culturally to them. So we're really trying to get as many young composers out there as possible, play a bunch of really, really wonderful, appealing music, and build up a community around the station.
Well, Nadia, with your show, you're not only bringing this great new music to light, but in other parts of your life, you're bringing this music to life. You're playing the viola. You've been commissioning new music since you were in school. Tell us about that. The most visible aspect of what we can access ourselves is your CD. What's it called?
The CD is called First Things First. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of it, honestly. It was the culmination of about 5 years of commissioning that I did in school and out of school. And my goal with that particular album was to create a classical music album that wasn't just like, here are three Beethoven string quartets for your library. I wanted something that was listenable as an album. You could put it on and listen from start to finish, and you were going to have an album experience with this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I'm proud of the fact that I it was three different composers and sort of programmed in a way that had a natural pace to it.
And we're going to hear one cut from it now. Tell us about the cut and this very famous composer.
We're going to hear, I think, one of Nico Muhly's etudes that he composed for me. Nico was unbelievably prolific, especially when he was a college student. He actually wrote me some really fantastically beautiful and challenging pieces of music. And the first one that he ever we ever worked on together was a duo for viola and cello, which is actually also on the record. Mm-hmm. That was unbelievably gorgeous, but virtually unplayable. So we ended up working together. I sort of taught him about how string instruments work, and we sort of work together on this, and the result is something that is absolutely gorgeous and just barely doable.
Let's hear it. Nico Muhly, Etude 1A for Nadia Sirota. Nico Muhly's Etude 1A, performed by violist Nadia Sirota. It's on her CD, First Things First. Nadia is a 27-year-old alum of From the Top, now living in New York City and doing really, really great things.
Nadia is not only performing great stuff, she's also continually trying to reach new audiences. We're all about that kind of musical innovation at From the Top. In fact, at FromTheTop.org, we've created an online map of America so that musicians, like Nadia, can find out about each other and share ideas. Are you changing the world through music? Well, go to FromTheTop.org and... Get on the map.
Negotiating the tortuous paths as an early career concert pianist isn't easy, believe me. That's why the story of our next alum, Tanya Gabrielian, is all the more impressive. Not only is she working successfully to carve out a niche for herself in the professional world, she's doing so having overcome a serious life reversal. She'll tell us her story in a minute, but first, I want you to hear how beautiful her music sounds these days. This is a recent recording of Tanya, now at 27 years old, performing The Lark by Glinka, arranged by Bala Kirev.
Thank you.
The Lark, played by Tanya Gabrielian, the Glinka piece arranged by Balakirev. God, it's really a shame that our listeners only get to hear you perform and they don't get to see you. I remember your presence from 10 years ago when you were on our show. What a passionate performer you were and how great it was to watch you play. How poised, how proud.
I make terrible faces.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Has that been a problem or?
Yes and no. You get different responses. I mean, nothing is planned or, you know, practiced. So It's all sort of what I do naturally. But I've gotten quite varying remarks on whether it helps or whether it detracts from the overall.
I'm very happy to say, though, we have got some great video of you at fromthetop.org so our listeners can check out visually what I'm talking about. I mean, the joy of your performing, the way – and as I keep coming back to this regal, you know, presence that you have on the piano. Tanya, after coming on our show, you did something that only maybe one or two other From the Top alums have done. You went to college in Europe. Where did you go?
Yeah. I went to London. I studied at the Royal Academy for 6 years.
And what led you there? Obviously, there's great training to be had there, but a lot of people don't know. It's a pretty good financial deal there, right?
I don't think many people can say living in London works out well for them financially, but I was somehow lucky. And they offered me a good scholarship, so I was able to be there. And I stayed in London for 7 years, actually. I stayed an extra year afterwards. Mm-hmm. It was just, I wanted to get out of the States and to experience, I mean, seeing that most of the music is written in Europe, to sort of see where it comes from and the cultures and, you know, to just sort of be involved in the history of it.
So there you were, though, adjusting as a new experience to a totally new country and, you know, the right idea, you know, going into, you know, the bosom of this tradition. But then you suffer an absolutely terrifying health setback. Can you tell us about what happened?
Well, it was partially my fault. I started doing Kung Fu when I moved to London. It's something that I always wanted to do. And I just love martial arts in general. And one sparring incident, I kicked someone's head and my foot caught behind their head and my leg, which was, we were on some sort of concrete cement floor, which is not very wise.
That's not wise.
There was sweat and so my foot slipped. So I fell from about head height down. And as a normal person, as a sane person, would probably put their hands down instinctively. I just remember thinking, put your hands back. Don't hurt your hands.
Don't hurt your
hands.
You
have to play.
Right.
So my head took the fall, and that wasn't so pleasant.
Afterwards, you know, you had dizziness. There were subsequent symptoms.
What happened is when I fell, the doctor said that I twisted my spine and my neck as I fell, so I started twitching.
But it eventually cleared up or eventually just kind
I mean,
of
it comes back every now and then. I was in hospital again a couple years later because of the same condition. Mm-hmm. When you get stressed or ill, when your body becomes physically weak,
Stress,
I'll start shaking again or It's just if somebody pats my back and I'm not expecting it, you know, I'll twitch.
Wow.
So
so getting back to the piano after this period, what was that like? Was it tough after being away for a month? Was it easy?
The whole experience kind of really made me happy in a way. I don't want to say happy, but there's this whole sort of general trend of musicians being depressed and, you know, tragic figures and, oh, nobody understands me. And, come on, really, people. it could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky that, you know, I'm a really fortunate person in everything that I've done, really. So to know that, it gives you this sort of boost of energy that, you know, allows you to focus on what you're doing without, you know, having any pity for yourself or, oh, you know, poor me, I'm going through this great struggle. I mean, when you talk to musicians in general, there's a general sense of self-pity, which I think is ridiculous. So, yeah, it helped me get over any sort of inclination I had towards that.
One of your most high-profile performances, which got rave reviews, I know, was at London's famous South Bank Center. How did that come about?
This was pretty much the first time that after everything had happened, that I chose my own program. I didn't really have a steady teacher for a while, so I really kept, I really had to discover what I wanted to play. So I played a Schnitker's Second Sonata and then three of Granados Goyescas.
How did you come to the Schnitker? I mean, had you known it before? had it been something you were dying to play for a while?
There's something about Russian music that's always spoken to me. I find it very loving. I mean, I don't know if you call, you know, chords you play with your elbows loving, but I find some love in it.
Yeah.
Not everyone does, but I do.
Well, and so you had that, and then the Granados, you know, would be, you know, about a familiarity, except that really not that many people play them, you know.
It's refreshing, I think, to hear something different for a change.
I just find it so fascinating that, you know, as a pianist, you really, you know, make your own road in terms of this repertoire that, you know, I so applaud that, and we're so proud of you, all of your accomplishments and your beautiful playing. Tanya Gorelian, 27 years old, now living in New York City.
Being in the audience for a From the Top taping is an unforgettable experience. We tape shows all over the country, and this February we'll be taping a show at our home base, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. For tickets and info, go to fromthetop.org.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations. And from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the National Endowment for the Arts, committed to advancing artistic excellence, creativity, and innovation for the benefit of individuals and communities. From the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, nurturing the development of talented, emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, it's our Alumni Musical Mavericks program featuring performers who, since appearing on our show, have gone on to do exciting new things in the world of music. Coming up, two exciting alumni composers, one who has released a CD of piano duos, and the other performs his own fiery composition for solo guitar. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. When Tim Andrus came on our show in 2003, he positively thrilled us at the piano, performing Ravel's extremely challenging Toccata. At that time, we knew he was also a budding composer, but we couldn't predict that he'd go on to become so prolific and so in demand by his peers, as well as some of the more senior players out there. It was wonderful to have him in the studio to share some of his music.
Timo, I've been hearing all about the great projects you've done on both coasts. It's very exciting, the stuff you're doing, and it's very, very exciting to have you back on the program.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
And really, the coolest thing of all is this new CD that you have, Timo. Tell everybody about the CD.
So I have a CD that came out in May called Shy and Mighty, and it's an album of 10 original pieces for two pianos that I play along with my good friend David Kaplan. It was actually my senior project as a Yale undergrad. I did it instead of writing a paper, and we sort of played bits of it over the years and decided to lay it down for real in a studio a couple of years ago.
Well, it's a beautiful sounding record. I mean, you know, we can talk about the music specifically, but I really enjoyed, you know, the clip that I heard. And actually, even...
Thanks so much.
Even more exciting, I think, the composition that we're going to hear, this particular piece, The Night Jaunt. Tell us about that one.
This was actually one of the first tracks on the record that I wrote, and it's really like a minimalist pop song for two pianos. I like these nocturnal subjects a lot, and it just seemed like a nocturnal type of piece to me.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear this, The Night Jaunt by Timothy Andrus. Thank you. That was The Night Jaunt by our composer and guest, Timo Andrus. Tim was playing one piano and his collaborator David Kaplan was performing on the other. It's from Tim's CD, Shy and Mighty, distributed by Nonesuch Records. Tim, first of all, tell us about the title of the record.
You know, I reached a certain point in my compositional life, like partway through college, I decided that I was going to title my pieces because no one wants to listen to someone's piano sonata number 3. it's just I like pieces with memorable titles, and I also feel like composers should be better at giving their pieces titles. Like, there's so many great composers who just give their pieces terrible titles. Mm-hmm. So,
your music is challenging and appealing. It has a great emotional accessibility. But it also appeals to the intricate side that structurally, you know, a lot of musicians are challenged by and are looking for.
I try and put my sort of dorky composer reflexes somewhat in the background because I know, like, not a lot of people are interested in that. But
well, I mean, so there are the instincts that you have. And then how much of it is being taught? Is this the music that you heard in your head 5 years ago, or has your thinking and writing changed as a result of the teaching that you've received?
I think it's changed as a result of growing older and hearing more things and being exposed to more people and more influences. I mean, any good composition teacher would agree with me that composition is impossible to teach, which is not to say I haven't had wonderful teachers. And I was in school and studying when I wrote Shy and Mighty, and it definitely benefited, especially from the sort of challenges that my teachers would make, sort of playing devil's advocate and, I don't know, it's a sort of Socratic method thing. I find that to be the most helpful, not sort of like, here, do this counterpoint exercise, like, right. Here, write a piece in the style of Hindemith.
So I imagine you're under, you know, a great tight schedule as far as commissions, or do you find yourself working at a leisurely pace? How's that going?
It's been kind of a real nose to the grindstone sort of year. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've just been cranking out one piece, and I literally have to start the next piece the next day. Wow. I don't think it's caught up to me yet. Like, maybe in a couple years I'll have like a crisis and stop writing and have to evaluate stuff. But now I'm really just trying to do as much as I possibly can. And I mean, I just moved to New York a year ago, mm-hmm. and I think that's sort of the best thing to do is mm-hmm. involve yourself in as many worthwhile things as you have the time and energy for.
Well, we expect great things, and it sounds like you're a very happy lad. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Timothy Andrus, 24 years old, our composer living in Brooklyn, New York.
You can connect with any and all of the great alumni on today's show by going to our website. Find out how to buy their music, find out where they're performing, and read all about them. It's at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Tim Calobre, our final alum on today's show, was just 10 years old when we first met him. And at that time, he was so shy that From the Top's roving reporter, Haley Goldbach, invited his mom, Selena, up on stage with us to help him tell his story.
Welcome, Selena.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Ms. Calobre, do you know if Tim was exposed to classical guitar? Do you know anyone who plays guitar?
No. In fact, when he was 4, he told me that he wanted to play the guitar, and I was like, wow, where'd that come from? Because my husband and I don't play the guitar. We know nobody who played the guitar at the time, and we had a piano. We didn't have a guitar. So we tried to steer him towards the piano, thinking, well, this'll do, this'll tide him over, and we figured he would just kind of forget about the guitar, but he kept after us. We finally did break down and give him guitar lessons, and I'm glad that we did.
That's great. Now, Tim, you started out on the piano and then switched to the guitar, or are you still playing piano a little bit?
I'm still playing piano.
Yeah? But
out of the blue, you just decided you had to play the guitar? I mean, did you hear somebody play it, or did you see it in a store, or what happened? I mean, how did you decide?
I don't really remember, but I just remember that I really wanted to play the guitar.
Yeah.
I feel, as a parent, really lucky because I just get to see him go. It all comes from him, and he just takes off with it, and I just sit back and enjoy the ride.
It's always great to talk to you, Tim. We've seen each other and performed together a couple of times since your very, very first appearance. What was it, 7 years ago? You're 17 now. Were you how old?
I think I was 10 at the time. I was in Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really my first big performance.
You were on both our radio and TV shows where we showcased your amazing talents as an instrumentalist. But since you've been on the show, you've actually become quite focused on composition. When did that start?
You know, that actually really started once I started playing instruments. I remember I wrote my first piece when I was 6 years old. It has some name, like something about a pony or something like that.
Some major chords in the left hand.
That sort of thing, C major.
Yeah.
I started when I was six. It's just kind of been something that I, you know, automatically wanted to do whenever I learned how to play an instrument. And I started writing on the guitar once I picked up the guitar at age seven. And I've just really kept with composing ever since then. It's really become something that I love to do so much that I'm thinking about, you know, turning it into a career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, did you find yourself picking other pieces apart in order to make them your own, or did you just have an idea out of nowhere that would start you writing?
You know, I've never really done that, that you're mentioning about taking an already written piece and kind of changing it. It always was sort of I wanted to write something of my own. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I felt kind of incomplete spending all my time playing stuff that people had already written because, mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess I had the sort of feeling that there are so many great musicians out there already, there's not much you can add by just, you know, playing what other people have already played very well before.
You've done pretty well. you've added immeasurably to the guitar experience. I mean,
and your
performances not only on the show but as placing first in the Parkinson competition junior division 2 years ago and winning the Spotlight Awards in L.A. and performing at the White House. I mean, you know, it's been no mean feat for you, young man. And you've won one of the most prestigious national honors that a young composer can achieve, the ASCAP Morton Gould Foundation Young Composer Award. And you won it twice.
That was when I was 13, and that was a guitar piece called Fuerza that I'm going to play today.
What were you thinking about when you wrote Fuerza?
Yeah, so much of classical guitar music is of Spanish origin, and, you know, almost all of the music that I play comes from Spain or is, you know, has that very distinct Spanish sound, and so that's so much of what I know about guitar music. So in my piece, I tried to, you know, write a similar sort of Spanish-sounding piece, which was based around the Phrygian mode. Mm-hmm. That's how I came up with the piece.
We'll hear Tim's phenomenal Spanish-inspired piece now, but first I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher O'Reilly.
And I'm Joanne Robinson.
Please join us next week when we take it from the top. And now, performed by the composer himself, Tim Calabrese's Fuerza.
Today's Alumni Musical Maverick Show is written and produced by Tim Banker and Reed Mangan for From the Top. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. From the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to ensure all Americans have access to health care, at rwjf.org. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.